Okay, let's make a start. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
We have a Shinui Mokum today, different place. The microphone working? It's good. I can't shout any louder than that, but this should be good enough. Can you hear me okay? Okay, they'll stop talking in a second. I just want to thank our sponsors, who have sponsored the whole of 2023, Le'ilo Nishmois, Branabas Branded, and Zelig Ben Kalman. Zichronim Livracha, very grateful for that sponsorship. So I apologize, we're in a slightly different place. It is a bit harder to do the shiur here. It's harder for me because I don't like sitting down. I feel very restrained when I'm sitting down, but that's okay. We'll do the best we can. We'll just have to work with our heads, not with our bodies. We're in a series. Let me map out for you what I'd like to do over the next few weeks. I have this series on kashrus issues that I'd like to finish. Today we're looking at Chalav Yisrael, a very practical topic, perhaps a bit more practical than last week where we looked at all sorts of unusual types of milk. Next week I'd like to get into cheese, which is a different but related topic. And then finally we'll get to our synthetic meat, genetically modified meat topic. That will bring us up to the Wednesday before Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is on a Wednesday night. I think we will be having a share that Wednesday morning. No reason why not. We'll do something Tisha B'Av related then. And then we have 3 weeks after Tisha B'Av in which we'll have Shiurim and we'll pick a different theme completely. Then I'm away, Bezrat Hashem, just for 1 week. One or two, I think it's just one. And then we're into 3 weeks prior to Rosh Hashanah. I don't want to rush the year away. Wednesdays have good mazel this year. There are no chagim or erev chagim on Wednesdays. So we get lots of shirim this year. And as I say, we'll get to Rosh Hashanah. We'll move into pre-Rosh Hashanah mode. Okay, fine. Milk. Chalav Yisrael. This is actually quite an emotive topic. People become very invested spiritually in Chalav Yisrael. More perhaps than you would imagine, based on the status, if you like. It's a prohibition. There's no question. Chalav akum, and it's halachic. But people are invested. I noticed on the Star K website. So their article on Chalav Yisrael said, "Chalav Yisrael, good for the neshama." There's a little bit of spiritual manipulation going on with that title. Like, I don't know if they put that on all their articles. I don't think I do if they say, you know, Gnevas, you know, whatever, good for the neshama. But Chalav Yisrael, they said that because they obviously feel we want you to keep Chalav Yisrael. You know the joke, famous joke, guy, you know, with milk in the fridge in the office. People keep stealing the milk. So he writes down, please, this is private milk, don't use. People still use it. He writes, please, it's Gneva d'Oraisa to use this milk. People still use it. So he writes on, this is not Chalav Yisrael. Nobody touches it. There's more than a grain of truth in that joke. And I want to get into the issue of why there are different views on this and why perhaps people have strong feelings on it too. Please do come in. There's water around the corner. Near the bathrooms, there's a water machine and cups as well. Okay, yes. Oh, yes, please could. Now, Miriam's reminded everyone to remind everyone. Could you please turn your phones off up here? That would be amazing. Thank you. Okay, so let's do this quite quickly. There's a lot of real sources today. There's a lot of work to do. So we know the basic principle, number one, Shayotzi minatame tame, vayotzi minatar tar. Whatever comes out of a treif animal is treif, whatever comes out of a kosher animal is kosher, and therefore milk from a cow is kosher, milk from a camel is treif. Milk from a horse is treif, milk from a pig is treif. There's no question about that. Chazal made a gezeira, drabonon, number two. Ve'elu dvarim shel ovdei kachavim, there are certain things that non-Jews make, asurim, which are prohibited, ve'ein isuran isur hana'a. But they're not prohibited to the point that you're not allowed to get benefit from them. Excellent. Yes. But you're not allowed to eat them. What are they? Chalav shechal va'ovid kachavim ve'ein Yisrael ra'ehu. It's explicit in the Mishnah. If milk is milked by a non-Jew and there's no supervision by a Jew, you are prohibited, we are prohibited from drinking that milk. Why? Gemara says, number three, immediately. Chalav lemai nechushla. What could be the problem with milk by a non-Jew? What could be the issue? Imishum echlufei. If we're worried that they might pass off treif milk as kosher, they'll give us camel's milk, and we thought we were getting cow's milk. That's not a problem. That's never going to happen. Tahor chiver, because kosher milk is white. Whereas treif milks, and I haven't done a study on this, but presumably most of the treif milks in the market at the time, camel's milk, horse milk, etc., yarok, is Yarok. Now, Yarok doesn't mean green. No one drinks green milk. The word Yarok is an incredibly flexible word in Chazal. It means yellow, off-white, bluey, greeny. I'd say like off-white yellow. It's a yellowish tinge to the milk. So you're going to immediately see it, that it's not kosher. So that's not a problem. V'imishum iruvei, and if it's because they might mix in a little bit of milk, treif milk, and you won't notice it, okay? Nekum, so try and curdle it. See if it curdles, see if it turns into cheese or butter. Because if it's got non-kosher milk in it, it won't work. So you can test it. You can try to see if it's kosher or not. So da'am amar, because we have a principle. Chalav tohor oimed. Kosher milk can be curdled to make cheese. But chalav tameh ain't oimed. And we'll see next week whether that's true or not today. It doesn't. Today you can make anything out of anything. You can make camel cheese, horse cheese, everything. So back in the day, they didn't used to be able to make that. We have a lot of chemicals and enzymes that we can put in today. So the Gemara says no. Idika boili gnevas dikvina. Sorry, if you're making milk for cheese, hachinami, then you're right. You can test it. You can curdle it, and you can see, and you'll know immediately if it's not kosher milk. But hachibamai skin. What are we concerned about? Obviously, dikboili le kachma. Chachma. Chachma is a kind of a milk drink. I looked it up. It's like whey mixed with W-H-E-Y mixed with a bit of salt. It's a milk drink. So you're not going to make it into cheese, and therefore you're not going to know. It looks okay. It's got a bit of treif milk in it. You're not going to notice it. You're going to drink it. You're going to drink treif. Ah, isn't it bottle? I don't mean like as in bottle of milk, as in batel. Okay. Yes, it is. Min b'minai, if it's milk in milk, it will be bottle b'roiv. So on a Torah level, even if they mix in milk, as long as it's not majority, or as long as you can't taste it, then actually on a Torah level it's kosher. But the rabbis made a gezeira that even though it would be bottle b'roiv, they're not going to let you drink it because we're worried about it having milk in it and it's not bottle b'shish. Okay, fine. There you are. So you can't drink any milk by a non-Jew. Yes.
Are you talking about whey milk, which is powdered?
No, this is pure milk. They didn't have powdered milk in those days. We'll get to powdered milk at the end. Yeah. Most of the milk products we eat these days with milk in them is powdered. I know the Cadbury's give you like a picture of someone pouring a glass of milk into their chocolate. I mean, I hope I don't get sued by Cadbury's, but I don't think that's how they do it. I think they use I think they use milk products. Actually, I used to act as a lawyer for Cadbury's many years ago. I used to go and inspect the Cadbury's chocolate making plant up in Liverpool. It was one of the little perks of my the job. The deal there is that anybody who worked there was allowed to eat anything they wanted, because after a while you just can't take any more chocolate. Apparently, I've not reached that point yet, but I'm reliably informed. Okay, good. Does this apply today? So whether we say it does or whether we say it doesn't, there's an absolutely fundamental principle that we have to discuss, which is called a davar shebeminyan. We talked about this before, but this applies in a lot of different cases. A davar shebeminyan here, minyan doesn't mean obviously a minyan for prayer. A minyan means a quorum, something which has been made by the rabbis, by the Sanhedrin in a quorum when they had their 71 set Sanhedrin. You cannot overrule that or override it until you've got another Sanhedrin. Let's have a look here. Says the Gemara in Beitza, a general principle which we follow, kol davar shebeminyan, tzarech minyan acher lahatira. If it's made with a quorum, you need another quorum, and we're stuck. We don't have a Sanhedrin. Agav, why don't we have a Sanhedrin? Another shir. Because we can't get our act together. Maybe we'll talk about that before Tisha B'Av. It's something to cry about on Tisha B'Av. Oh, they're doing it downstairs. Okay, part of the solution downstairs. Go, Baruch Hashem. The Rambam has a developed understanding of this. Let's look at this Rambam quite quickly. It's very interesting. Says the Rambam, Beit Din HaGadol, Shidarshu Ba'achat Min HaMidot Kifi Mashiniru Be'enehem. If the Sanhedrin, they were only talking about this classic Sanhedrin, if they darshaned, meaning they looked at the Pesukim and they interpreted them, we think it means this rather than that. And they made the din. And a later bet din come along. The nirilotam acher, and they have a different perspective. Listorotah, and they want to override the previous bet din because they see it differently. Harizis soter, they're allowed to override it. You can't bind a future bet din. Now they can do whatever they want in terms of their own interpretive power. You have to go to the judges in your day. You don't have to worry about what they said two generations ago or 100 years ago. You go with your people. That's if it's a drash. They always have the power. And the Brisker Rav has a beautiful piece on Rut. Remember when Rut, when Boaz comes to Ploni Almoni, and he says to him, I want to marry Rut, I want to be the Goel, but I want, you know, you come before me. Will you take the land? And he says, I'll take the land. And he says, well, you should just know, if you take the land, you have to marry Rut as well. And he goes, oh, I can't do that. Why? Pen yashket et nachalati, I'm going to mess up my kids. I'm going to mess up my kids because you can't marry a Moabite woman. So the Brisker Rav says, well, why does he need to say, I can't marry her because it's Osa. I can't marry a non-Jew, I can't marry a Moabite. Why is he worried about his kids? Because he says to Boaz, okay, you're the head of the Sanhedrin. You've paskened, you've ruled that it's only the Moabite men that are prohibited. The Moabite women are permitted. Good, I'll rely on you for me. That's fine, you're the boss. But what happens if 60, 80 years from now, a new Beit Din comes along and darshans it differently because they have the power to do that? My kids are going to find out in 100 years they're not actually Jewish. I'm not taking the risk. So Boaz says, okay, I'll take the risk. I'm prepared to take that risk. Very interesting. But based on this Rambam that you cannot bind a future Beit Din. Beit Din shegazru gezeira. But if the Beit Din didn't make a drash, but they made a gezeira, a decree, rabbinic decree, because don't forget, a drash is doraita. The decrees Rabbanon, or tiknu takana, or they made a takana, v'enigu minhag, or they started a minhag, u'pashat adav b'chol Yisrael, and it spread through the Jewish people, v'amen acharehim bet din acher, and then a later bet din comes along, u'bikesh levatal devarim harishonim, and they want to override it, u'la'akor also ha'takana, or ta'gzera, or ta'minhag, they want to change the gzera, takana, minhag, not getting into the difference between gzeras and takanas, and minhagim, it's not getting, he calls a minhagot, actually, slightly different from minhagim, ein yachol. The later Beit Din cannot override actually Gadol min Harishonim b'chochma b'minyan. Different rule. If you want to override a Derabbanon, you have to be a bigger Beit Din. Why? Maybe because Derabbanons need more strength. People are going to be a bit, you know, fast and loose with Derabbanons. You can't just mess around and wipe them out. You need a bigger Sanhedrin. Gadol b'chochma in wisdom and minyan. What's minyan? Minyan doesn't mean the number of rabbis, because it's always fixed at 71. Minyan means different things, maybe the support of the rabbonim in the wider community for that Sanhedrin, etc. You have to be bigger. If it's only bigger in one of these respects, you cannot cancel it. Afilu batal hatam. Even if you think you know the reason why they made it, and the reason doesn't apply anymore, shebiglalo gazra arishonim, or itkinu achronim, okay, Otskinu, sorry. Eina achronim yicholim levatel etshiyu gedolim mehem. Interesting. Even if you are absolutely convinced that the reason that the Beis Din made this gezeira was X, and that reason simply doesn't apply anymore, you may not override the earlier Beis Din until you are, the Sanhedrin is great. Interesting. Yes, sir.
Can I just go back to Boaz offered the land?
Yes. Yes. Oh, he didn't want to take a chance. He doesn't have any. Yes, possibly. It's a good question. People do worry about things like that, you know. Boaz is prepared to go out on a limb. That was what made him gave him the oz, the strength in Boaz to do that kind of thing. Other things are more nervous. You know, there are people who are more anxious about the future. Yes, sir. Correct. You know, there are courts that you find out you thought you converted, and then all of a sudden you realize that other people won't accept the conversion. People are nervous about that. And on the top of page 2, just I wanted to mention, and the Rambam says something here quite controversial. Not everybody agrees with that. But ma dvarim amurim, when do I say you can override it if you're a greater Sanhedrin? But varim shaloi asher ato kidei la'asot siag. Only with things that weren't for a siag, for a fence around the Torah, the Tziag LaTorah, and a Kashar Dinei Torah, but they're just dinim. For example, the rabbi said, you need a minion of 10 men. A later Sanhedrin can override that as long as they're Gadol B'Chochma or minion. They can, you know, when we get a new Sanhedrin, let's assume it's going to be greater in Chochma and minion than the last one, they can say, no, a minion is now 5 men and 5 women. I don't know if they will, I'm not suggesting they should, but I'm saying that they could, okay? Aval dvarim sharu beis din nigzor, but if the rabbis in the past made a fence, ula asur lasot siag, in Pashat Isuran Bechol Yisrael, if the protective measure was accepted by the Jewish people, Ein Bet Din Gadol Acher Yachol Akran Ol Hatiran. You cannot ever release that. Afilu Haya Gadol Min Rishon, even if it's great. Now, if we pass it like this, Rambam, then Chalav Yisrael or Chalav Akum will always be Chalav Akum. Meaning, even when a new Sanhedrin comes and says, well, we want to override it, so I'll say, well, you can't, because it was a Gezerah. Even if you're greater, you can't override it. So not everybody agrees with this. Therefore, the Rambam basically sees that like a three sort of a typology of this, of Dinim. If it was a Drash, any later Sanhedrin can override it. If it was a general Takana, then a later Sanhedrin can override it if they grade it in Chochmah and Minyan. And if it was a protective fence around the Torah, then nobody can ever override it. And again, on that last point, there are different opinions. So where does that leave us with Chalav Yisrael? If Chalav Yisrael was a Davar Shebeminyan, meaning if the Sanhedrin got together and said, non-Jewish milk by non-Jewish people is not kosher, then we're stuck. Because right now we don't have a Sanhedrin at all. We certainly don't have one which is Gadol B'Chochma Uminyan. And even if we get one, which is Gadol B'Chochma Uminyan, if you follow this last Rambam, then we're not going to be able to do anything about it, because this is clearly a fence to stop somebody, in case somebody comes to eat, to drink non-kosher milk. So this has been a big debate. Most authorities understand that Chalav Yisrael was a Davar Shebeminyan, and therefore you need a Sanhedrin to overrule it. However, if you don't, look at there's a famous psak, we'll make it famous today, of the Pri Chadash. The Pri Chadash was a Rav of Cheske de Silva, living in 17th century Italy, and then Yerushalayim, Sephardi Rav. And he has a very famous psak on Chalav Yisrael. Look what he says. It will seize part now and part later. But odd, there's another, Shalta. You asked me also, Chalav Shechel Bo Nochri, a non-Jew who milks a cow. The Ein Yisrael Ro'ehu, and there is no supervision. The Ein B'Mokam Davatame, but there are no treif animals there. It's not a place where they have treif animals. It's, you know, they don't have camels in Amsterdam. He's going to say in a minute, Amsterdam. They don't have camels there. So you know there's no treif animals. They do have horses, but in a farm you know there's no treif animals. Or Kagon Shehaya Ha'eda B'Tochadir, or you know that the flock was kind of penned in, or the herd was penned in, Ubadak, and the Jew checked beforehand, the Loi Hayasham Davartame, and there were no treif animals there. The Yatsa, and then he left. The Havi Anachri Chalav Me'osadir, and then the non-Jew brought you milk from that flock, from that herd. And the Loi Hayachli Rose Chalav Klav. But the Jew wasn't there at all to supervise it. You're just relying on the non-Jew. Im Gezarta Chalav. Im gezeres achalav, sorry, have yesh gezeres gvinas anachrim or not? Is the rabbinic decree on milk of the same strength as the rabbinic decree on cheese? Yes or no? We'll see next week that even if you know with 1000% certainty that the cheese is vegetarian cheese, you can't eat it. We'll see why next week. Even if you know with absolute certainty, is that the truth with milk? So he says tshuva. Hadavar barur. It's absolutely clear to me, he says, ki hagvina ne'esra b'minyan. When they prohibited cheese, they did it as a quorum. Avaloi kein b'chalav shechal b'goy. But when it came to the milk of a non-Jew, they never made an official decree. They just said, we're concerned, there's a problem, maybe that he'll mix some in, better to be on the safe side. But they never said, this is us in the same way. How does he know that? I'm not sure. But he says clearly, the milk was never made with a minion. She'asra oisim mishum chashash. They simply said it, maybe from the wording of the Gemara's there. Clearly they made the rabbinic law. It is a rabbinic law, but they made it as a chashash. They were worried rather than decreed. A chashash, davar tame. And therefore the Pri Chadash, we'll see later, said he lived in Amsterdam. And in Amsterdam, all the holy Jews in Amsterdam, apart from very few, drank regular non-Jewish milk. This is 400 years ago. In Amsterdam, he says they're relying on the fact that the rabbis, when they made this gezerah, it was not a davar shebeminyan, and now we don't have a problem, because if you know there are no camels or horses in the flock, then what are you worried about? The Chazal were worried, so you don't need to be worried here, and they had a very clear reason for it. So he says it's okay. This is a minority opinion. We'll see, very small minority. The mainstream opinion is the Chasam Sofer in number 7, the Tiferet Shoel in number 8. Looking at number 7, the Chalav Gezeres Kadmonis Haisa. The decree on milk is ancient. The Az Astra Chalav She'ed Yisrael Ro'ehu. That's when they prohibited milk when there was no Jew watching. Yes, I'll give it to you that the reason they made the decree originally was because of a concern of Erev Davar Tameh, that they worried about non-Jewish, non-kosher milk. This was a rabbinic gezerah from the rabbis. It's in the Mishnah. Stam. There's no difference of opinion here. Rabbi Akiva says this, Rabbi Elazar says this. This is a Stam Mishnah. Everyone agrees it was made b'minyan. Therefore, Asra Kol Chalav, they made all milk treif from a non-Jewish source. She'ein Yisrael ra'eu, unless there's a supervision by a Jew, a chaliva, or yachol lirois afilu leke chashash davar tami. Even if you're not worried, even if you're sure that there's no davar tami, says the Chasma Sofa, it's treif. It's treif. And the Tiferes Yisrael says it's like wine. It's the same thing. Look at number 8. The Eila Hakshos, don't ask me. He also mid-19th century. Michalav shel nochri v'stam yenam. Don't ask me about milk and wine. Stam yenam, again, like stam chalav. We invented this new phrase, chalav stam. In the modern world, we call it chalav Yisrael, chalav akum, and chalav stam. Chalav stam is the general production by companies of milk. Don't ask me about those. Da'afta bizman hazeh nidbatal hatam, even though the reason has gone away, even for the wine. I mean, what's the concern about wine? We're worried that they may use the wine for avodah zarah. So says the Tiferes Yisrael already 200 years ago, nobody's using bottled wine in a winery for avodah zarah. Okay, you go to the church, don't drink the communion wine. There's a, you know, it's the shaila. But today's wine is just wine. So why would it still be a problem? We know the reason why it was asked, and it doesn't apply. They're still prohibited today, because it was a davashe b'minyan. You don't have a quorum to override that. Now, of course, with wine, there's an additional factor, which still does apply, which is that the secondary gezerah, not just because of avodah zarah, was we don't want Jews to socialize with non-Jews, because they'll come to marry them. And by the way, thousands of years later, that's still how it works. People drink with each other, they socialize with each other, they go out with each other, they get married to each other. That's how it all started, over a glass of wine. Okay? And therefore, there is still that gezeirah, which of course is not true of milk. If you go to a bar and say, would you like a glass of milk, dear? Then that's not going to get anyone very far socializing at all. But nevertheless, he says it's davar shebeminyan, you can't override it. Okay, so that's the... Okay, fine. So that's the majority and the minority opinion. Clear majority says davar sheva minyan. Even if you think the reason's completely irrelevant, you can't drink it. Minority depends on the reason. Okay. So let's take the majority, which is the way that almost everybody paskins. How treif is it really? Is it really, really treif? Meaning, does it assay your pots and pans treif? So here's an interesting point. Look in the Shulchan Aruch, number 9. Chalav shechal ba'ovid kachavim. If a non-Jew milks an animal, and a Jew doesn't see it, then it's awesome. Shema erev b'chalav tameh, maybe you mixed in a non-kosher milk. Ha'echoyle b'beiso v'Yisrael yoshev v'mechutz, if the non-Jewish farmer is in his farm, and the Jew sitting outside, not inside. Im yadua, if it's known, she'ein lo davar tameh be'edro, if you know that he doesn't have anything treif in his flock, then mutter, then it's okay, because at least you're sitting outside. Remember the pre-chadosh that we just had, that we rejected, said that if you know he's nothing in his flock, you don't need to be there at all. He says, no, you have to be sitting outside, because maybe he'll sneak in a quick horse, and he'll do a bit of that. Afilu eni Yisrael yochel erotzi b'shas shulcholev, even if you can't see the actual milking, it's good enough to have a mashgiach sitting at the entrance. And the Ramon then adds on, ulechat chilat tzarech leos ha-Yisrael b'tchilas ha-chaliva, really the Jew needs to be there the whole time, at least at the beginning of the milking. V'yiru b'kli, and he has to check in the kli, shelo yihei b'kli she-cholvim bo davar tameh, that there are no residual bits of treif milk there. V'nagu lahachmir, and we are very machmir, says the Ashkenazim, says the Ramon. We don't even use a regular pail. We won't even let the non-Jew use a regular milk pail, in case it has little droplets of, whoa, this is like very serious. Now you know why Starkei is saying it's good for your neshama. Even though this is an Issa de Rabbanon, the Ramah says, we're very particular about it. Lechatchila, you check the beforehand and you use a different pail. And then he says, Chalav shel ovdei kochavim oisrim kelim, that non-Jewish milk, chalav akum will asar up your kelim, shenitbashru behem, kashar isa, like any other Issa, Af al pisha enu rak sofek, even though it's really only a doubt, shema erev bo dame tame. It's a rabbinic prohibition based on a doubt, even if it's a small doubt, us as all your pots and pans. That's it. Sounds pretty shreif. There's an interesting question I wanted to raise in Lomdus, in terms of the conceptualization here. And I heard this a few times. Rabbi Rosner likes to talk about this in his Daf Yomishir. There's a fascinating question, which is a little bit of more like Brisker type Lomdus, but it comes up earlier too. When the Torah says something is prohibited, like pork, it's intrinsically prohibited. The thing itself is treif. When the rabbi said something's prohibited, like chicken cooked with milk, or like this milk, right, milk by a non-Jew, is the thing itself treif? Is there a prohibition in the cheftza? Is the item itself treif? Or is really the item is just an item? But the rabbi said that you are not allowed to eat it. It's an iser, if you like, on the gavra, on the individual. Well, what's the difference? It's treif either way. You're not allowed to eat it either way. There could be many differences depending on how you will analyze it. Look in number 10. Fascinating Shulchan Aruch. In Choshen Mishpat. What if you go to the shops and they sell you food and it turns out to be treif? Can you get your money back? Interesting question. Oh, very good question. You obviously wrote the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, fine. Or you already read it before. Look in number 10. V'kein ha-shochet para, if you shech the cow, or machron, you sell the meat, v'noda shehi treifa, and then it turns out later that you get a notice, recall, you know, product recall, it's turned out that this meat is treif, please bring it back. Masha achlu achlu, whatever you ate, you ate, v'yachse lehem adamim, but you can get your money back. You ate the meat already, you go back to the butcher and say, look, I ate it already, but I want my money back. U'masha lo achlu, what you didn't eat, yachse lo habasa, then you take the meat back. Either way, you get your money back. If you ate it, you get your money back because he damaged you. You ate a piece of treif, even though you didn't realize it. And if you can take the meat back, you take it back. He could always sell it off to a non-Jew. That's fine, but you take it back. Aval, hamoichel chaveru davar she'isa achilaso midivrei sofrim. But if you buy something on the shops and it turns out it was rabbinically prohibited, let's say bisman hazeh when trumas and maisrus is drabonon, according to almost everybody. And you eat food, and you eat fruit, and then it comes out, oh, the fruit wasn't maisered. I'm really sorry, please be aware, the fruit wasn't maisered. Im hayu aperis kaimim, if you still have the produce, machser aperis v'noitel damav, and you can take them back to the shop, and say, look, I don't want to mess around with taking trumas and maisers, please give me my money back and take the fruit back. Ve'im achlam, but if you ate the food, achal, then you ate it, ve'ein amoichem machser lo klum, and he doesn't owe you anything. You say, yeah, but I ate trey food. He goes, nah, you don't get your money back. It was drabonon. Why? What's the difference? If you ate food which is prohibited on a Torah level, you get your money back. And if you ate food which is prohibited on a rabbinic level, you don't get your money back. What's the difference? So the Nesiva Shalom, Nesiva Samishpat rather, the Nesiva Samishpat on Choshen Mishpat says a beautiful idea. He says, because if you eat something rabbinically prohibited and you didn't realize, then really you didn't do an Aveira. If you eat pork by mistake, you've put trey food into your body by mistake as a shogeg, but you still ate trey. With the rabbis, he said, it's not that the food is treif. It's that the rabbi said, you're not allowed to rebel against the rabbis and ignore what they say. Well, in this case, I didn't rebel against anybody. I just ate food. I didn't even realize it was treif. Oh, you didn't realize? So you didn't do anything wrong. But it was treif. No. You weren't allowed to eat it. You didn't realize. You didn't do anything wrong. You didn't rebel against anybody. What are the nafkaminas? There are certain implications. Do you need to do tshuva if you ate something? Or if you did a rabbinic prohibition by mistake? You broke Shabbos by mistake, the Rabbonon. Do you even need to feel bad about it? Maybe you didn't do anything wrong. Because it's only wrong if you do a Rabbonon on purpose, maybe. According to this, can you give food which is rabbinically prohibited to a baby? So the baby has no chiyuv of chinuch, but with treif food on a Torah level, you can't put treif into them. You're not allowed to give them something which is matam teim halev. It does something to their neshama. But if it's only rabbinically prohibited and you're a baby, you're not rebelling against the rab. What's the problem? All sorts of interesting applications. Why is a sofik derabbanon? Why are we more lenient with a sofik derabbanon? The Rambam says, really, every rabbinic mitzvah is also a Torah mitzvah, because if you do a rabbinic prohibition, you're also rebelling against the rabbis. It's loy sasar. That's what gives the rabbis their authority. And on a Torah mitzvah, if there's a suffix, we're machmir. Why are we makel? Why are we lenient with a Sofik Drabonim? Maybe for the same reason. Because maybe when the rabbi said don't do it, they said don't do it if it's really the thing. But if we're not sure it's the thing, maybe they never said it. Maybe they're not worried about that because it's on you, not the thing. Okay, there's all sorts of lumdus ideas. We could talk about this for an hour, but we're not going to. But I just thought I'd give you a little bit of analysis and conceptualization as to how that works. But clearly, the Shulchan Aruch Paskens, it sounds like it makes your kelim treif if you put chalav stam. Okay, look in chalav akum. Look on page 3, a whole page of English. I'm not going to read any of this. I brought you the OU's account of how they do their milk supervision. You'll see what they do. They said you have to be.
Is there an order that?
You have to go on. I can't remember. Yeah, if you go on the. I should have put the name here. If you go on the. That's not a sheet, I'm afraid. Is there another sheet anywhere? Maybe you just have to look over someone's shoulder. I'm sorry. If you go to the link, you'll see if there was an author. I can't remember. It's an article from the OU, and you can see how they do all the supervision, and that's great. Okay, so why in the 20th century and the 21st century are so many people less particular about Chalav Yisrael? There are 3 reasons, okay? The first reason is, well, what if there's no source of treif milk? Well, I thought we already went through that. Didn't we just say that the Pri Chadash says it's okay, but we don't paskin like the Pri Chadash? So not so quick, not so quick. Number 12. The Gemara, picking up on the Mishnah, says as follows. The Eilu Mutarim Ba'achila, the following things are mutter to eat. Chalav Shechal Ba'ovid Kachavim Yisrael. Ra'ehu, as long as there's a Jew supervising, you can drink the milk from a non-Jewish dairy. Says the Gemara. Now, what about this case? Yoshev Yisrael. What if the Jew is sitting down? Rashi says, Afilu ein ro'ehu. And you can't see. The Jew can't see exactly what the non-Jew is doing. But sad ed roshel ovid kachavim, he's at the side. For ovid kachavim chaylev loy, and the non-Jew milks, umevi loy, and brings it to him. Ein ha-choshesh, that's not a problem. The Jew is sitting at the side, and and brings you the milk, and you don't have to be worried about that. What's the problem? It says no problem. So heichidami, what is the case here? Eid the lake kadava tami be'edro. If we're talking about a case where there's no treif animals at all in the herd, then pshita. What does pshita mean? It's obvious. It's pashut. You didn't have to ask that question. Meaning, says the Mishnah, you can eat milk supervised by a Jew. Says the Gemara, the supervision is okay, even if the Jew can't see exactly what's going on. He's sitting at the side. Says the Gemara, if we're talking about where there are no treif animals in the herd, then obviously it's okay. Now, what obviously? Obviously it's okay if there's a Jew sitting outside, or obviously it's okay. It's just okay. Why do you need a Jew at all? If there's no treif animals there, then pshita. What is this pshita? Is it obviously okay, no problem, or obviously okay as long as there's someone outside? So this is where the disagreement happens, and this is where the pre-chadash comes in. And if you look in number 13, he says, I think he means it's obviously okay completely. Number 13. Haklala oile debi'ir shaloi nimsa sham chalav. Chalav tamei. In a city where there is no chalav tamei. And by the way, people say in Israel this is more of a problem than it was in Europe, because there are camels in this country, and people do make camel milk. I mentioned last week, they make camel ice cream, gamalida, and it's meant to be very healthy, and it's meant to be very tasty, but it's very, very treif. Okay. If there's no treif milk in the town, I give you even a commercial reason. If there is non-kosher milk, but it's very expensive, why would a non-Jew waste money and put camel's milk in or horse's milk if it's got a high price? They're not going to mix that in. You can rely on the commercial common sense of the non-Jewish farmer. Okay? Mutalik nois meha akum. You're allowed to buy the milk from the non-Jew. Meha akum chalav shechal boy beloy re'ias Yisrael klal. I allow it without any supervision at all. V'chein matzati ha-minak poshet, and this is what I found is the poshet minak. He started in Italy, but he lived in Amsterdam. Po ba-Amsterdam. V'chein nahakti ani, and this is what I do. He says, I drink the non-supervised milk 100%. Gam kein zulat ksat yechidim anitzarim b'zeh. There are a few individuals who drink Chalav Yisrael in 17th century Amsterdam. Aval be'ir she'nimsa sham chalav tamei, but if there is non-kosher milk around, even if you don't think he has one in his flock, You have to check in advance. You have to check in the kli, like the Ramal said. You have to supervise the whole supervision of the whole thing, from beginning to end. Or you have a mashgiach popping in and out, so any moment he could see them. Or at least he has to stand outside. But so that they can't bring in on the milk. The halav hachin, if you don't have that supervision, afilu b'di'evid osa. He says, don't think that I'm Mr. Makel on Chalav Yisrael. I'm only lenient where there's literally not tray for milk there, or it's just too expensive. There's no real chance it's ever going to mix in. But if there is a chance, absolutely, you have to have supervision. Even b'di'evid, you can't drink it, etc. Now, interesting, Rav Chaim Jachta, in one of his articles, said he was told by Rav Melech Shechter, also spelled the same as Rav Herschel Shechter, with an A, but not related, or maybe cousins, I'm not sure. He said he told him that all the Americans who drank milk from the regular dairies back in the mid-20th century, all knowledgeable Americans felt that they were relying on the Pri Chadosh before Rav Moshe Feinstein. Meaning Rav Moshe Feinstein didn't start people drinking regular milk. He says everybody who used to drink the milk was relying on the Pri Chadosh. Because in America in the 50s, 60s, 40s, whatever, there's simply no horse milk or camel milk going into the system. There just isn't. There can't be. It's just not going to happen. It's irrelevant. We're not talking about Rwanda. We're talking about America. Okay? And therefore, they were all relying on this Pri Chadosh. Now, that's a problem. Because the Pri Chadosh is a very small minority opinion on almost everybody else. Paskin's not. And I brought you the Aruch HaShulchan. I'm not going to go through it all now. But he says very clearly, and again, the Aruch HaShulchan is also open to be lenient where the minhag of the people is lenient. He tries very hard wherever he can to justify the practice of Jewish people. But here he says, no way. He says, in Eastern Europe in the late 1800s, there's loads of Jews who are drinking the regular milk. He says, it's terrible. It's treif. And they're relying on one opinion in the Pri Chadosh. He's very unhappy about it. Have a look here. Just pick it up the three lines down. So three lines up from the bottom in the Aruch HaShulchan. He says it's completely also without supervision. I'm just on the third line up from the bottom. For this reason, there are so many people who are lax with this particular prohibition in our generations. For our many sins, we've seen this and we've heard this, and they rely. They rely on a particular view who did this. They don't realize. They don't realize how serious it is. They think, rabbinic is even more serious than divrei Torah. And any rabbi who allows you to drink from the unsupervised milk, he has to bear his sin. This is terrible, he says. It's clear in the Torah. It's clear in the Shulchan Aruch. And all of the Achronim, mi yachol laha is panav. Who can be so chutzpedik, ulamale tavas nasho, and do something that he wants to do, and say this milk is okay? If you're careful about halacha, you better not drink this milk. I think you're beginning to see why this is an emotive topic, because this is not a new issue that came up in the 20th century. This was an issue the rabbis were fighting in Eastern Europe as well, where there were Jews who said, I'm relying on the Pri Chadosh. It's fine. There are no non-kosher animals in the herd. It'll be okay. And the Aruch HaShulchan's coming along and saying, no. This is a particularly minority opinion. You may not rely on this. A rabbi may not paskin like this. So there's all this kind of religious energy being fed into this debate as we enter the 20th century. Okay, good. Page 5. Let's get to the 20th century. So everybody now knows, especially if you're American, that all the milk products, the OUD, which is not from supervised milk, it's not Chalav Yisrael, and many from families who drink milk which is not supervised in America, in England less so, but still, we'll talk about why less so, they all say, well, we're relying on Rav Moshe Feinstein, right? He's the one that they rely on. Why didn't Rav Moshe Feinstein allow this? Didn't we just see the Aruch HaShulchan said, who is the rabbi who will be chutzpedik to go against this clear psak of the majority? You can't rely on the Pri Chadosh. So came along Rav Moshe Feinstein with a genius answer. And he said, you know something? I think the milk in 20th century America from the regular dairies is kosher, even according to the Chasam Sofer. I'm not relying on the Pri Chadash. I'm going with the Frum crowd, with the vast majority, but there's a very big difference today. And he gives two critical factors as to why it's different today. He says, today we have government supervision in a way they didn't in Europe. The Tsar wasn't interested what farmers were milking in the 1880s in Europe. You were relying on the farmer. He says the matzav is completely different today, and even the Chasam Sofer and the majority prohibitive crowd would agree with it. Why? Okay, number 15. He's relying on a Gemara, which is part of the original Gezerah. Says the Gemara, le'olam de'ikar davatami. Really, the prohibition is when there is a possibility of treif milk getting in. V'chikai, if he gets up, chazile, he can see. V'chiyasev, loy chazile. And if he sits down, he can't see. Meaning, what is the case which is okay? We are worried that the farmer back in the Babylonian might put a bit of horse milk in, but there's a Jew there. Ah, he's sitting down. You can't see sitting down. I could stand up and check. Okay? If I could stand up, that's good enough. Why? Maudatema, you might have thought, Kaven de Yasiv loy chazile, since when you're sitting down you can't see, Nechash dil me mesi, Vomar of Bay, he'll just shove in a little bit of milk when you're not, he looks the Jew sitting down, put in the milk there. He says, no. Kamash Malan, the Gemara says, we see from this, Kaven de ki kai chazile, since he could stand up if he wanted, and he would see if he stood up, Irutusi mirtus. The non-Jew is scared. The loymer of Bain, he won't mess it up because he's worried. You're going to find him out. And then he's going to be a liar. And he doesn't want to risk it. He's got a reputation. He's a farmer. He doesn't want to be, you know, bandied around his name, you know, in the dirt that he's a liar. So there's a concept of mirtas, that even if you can't actually see it, if we're confident that the non-Jew would be too scared to actually fool you and put the milk in, that's good enough. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, that's the reality today. Number 16. Umashikasav kvoy torasa harama. He says, you wrote to me, Lashon le'elo mizdarim mistam chalav. And you said people should be very careful about stam chalav. Habami nachrim, which comes from non-Jews. Tamua, I'm very surprised that you're so down on the people who drink regular milk. Daha'elu she'ein nizharim, because those people who are not careful, according to your opinion, these are frum people who drink OUD milk. These are regular, these are not just people who don't care, these are people who are careful. Companies, and it's only the milk from the companies that they drink. And there's a very good reason. Af mashu, they're scared to put even a tiny little drop of treif milk. Misad hashkachas dini hamadina she'ain shemalzeh, because the American government will fine them millions of dollars. Ubemirtas, and when we know that the non-Jew is concerned, like Azra, we know I'm not going against the gezera. Meaning, Rav Moshe is genius. He says, I'm not overriding the Gemara. I can't do that. It's a davar shebeminyan. You need a Sanhedrin. And I'm not disagreeing with the Chasam Sofer and going with the minority opinion. I think that it is a problem, even if there are no non-kosher animals there. I'm saying it's okay because the Gemara said it's okay. Because the Gemara said if the non-Jew is concerned, then you don't need to be bothered. Yes, sir?
And if you're living there in Mississippi or Texas,
okay, good.
So, no-Jews there, no...
I don't know America as well as you do. I don't think the milk in Mississippi has a lower level of supervision. Oh, then?
In that era.
No, but it was in the 50s. He wrote this in 1954. The milk was supervised in Mississippi in 1954, just like it was in New Jersey.
There's no camels.
It's irrelevant if there are camels in Mississippi. Even if there were camels there, it's still supervised. Okay? Look at what he says here. Ubermirta's third line. Ubermirta's like Gazru. They didn't make a gezerah when the non-Jewish company is worried. Kihadi Yisrael Yoshev Basad. It's just like the Jew sitting outside. Bedrash al Akum. Shemutah, that's allowed, even though he can't see. After Loi Chazile, even though he can't see the milk being milked. Kevin Shiyachali Rois, because he could see if he stood up, because Shiyamud. Mirtas, then the non-Jew is worried. Ulachain Sabri, therefore, it's clear they hold. The Gamba Mirtas Zeh shall Oinish Chukei Hamedina. Scared also means scared of a very big fine. It's a very big financial incentive. Loi Hai Bechlal Agazera. It was never called Chalav Akum. This isn't Chalav Akum. says the milk that they're producing in America today is not Chalav Akum. It's Chalav Yisrael, effectively. It never needed supervision. Yes?
Wouldn't that depend on what standards the government sets for itself?
Yes, 100%. 100%.
Pure foods legislation,
100%.
You could say that orange juice is pure, even if it contained less than a certain amount of something else.
Correct. You could say 100% pure orange juice and it can contain 2% something else. Absolutely.
So how do we put that?
So I didn't go into the specifics of milk supervision. I'm guessing that if you say milk is milk, you can't put even 1% or 0.5% or 0.1%.
Point. You can.
You can? And you can put tray for milk? Australia. I don't know about Australia. Really? That's the case in Australia?
I'm saying that much of what is pure can
I hear. So we need to investigate
it. Still pure.
It's very clear that you can't rely on Rav Moshe if you go to the Democratic Republic of Congo. Okay? You can't rely on that. There is no milk supervision. Even if they say they supervise it, it's not got the same degree of supervision. I asked Rabbi Jeremy Conway in the London Based Inn. I've been told many times by indignant Americans that the reason that in America it's okay is because the supervision is much better than in England. And in England it's not okay. I asked Rabbi Conway, he said, nonsense. He says the supervision in England is every bit as rigorous as the supervision in America. So why are there less of the, if you like, yeshivish crowd that rely on this heter in England than America? He says it's because Rav Moshe Feinstein was less of an influential posik in England than he was in America. It's nothing to do with the milk supervision. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't speak to Australia.
No, but he was speaking about America.
He was speaking about America. Absolutely, 100%. As far as I'm concerned, the London based in clearly apply this to England as well, and they happily give a heksher to products which are not Chalav Yisrael. Okay? Australia, I don't know. Even if they can add stuff in Australia, Is it like calcium they can add in, or is it mamash like camel's milk they can add in?
I don't know what the derivatives of those.
Okay, good. So we need to check. What do the Australian crowd do? Do people drink the regular milk?
Australia, there's a big Chabad
influence. Chabad are very machmer on Chalav Yisrael. There's no way they don't do that anywhere in America either.
So those. No, and I think Chassidish also.
Okay. But do any from people drink the regular milk in Australia? Okay, so we'll have to ask, you know. I assume that it's been checked and it's fine.
It's not a dividing fence between...
Correct.
I shouldn't say this, but between who is...
Yeah, as I said at the beginning.
It's throughout the world, this whole thing. It's
correct.
Terrible.
Correct.
But that is the position.
Correct. Yes, sir.
Just a factual question relative to all. Isn't it simply a presumption that there is government supervision you can rely on it without actually going behind the government supervision?
Depends on the government. There's no magic of government supervision. As I say, in Rwanda, they also have government supervision, so, but they have a different standard of government.
So, on what basis did Ralph Feinstein think that the government...
That's a good question. I assume that he checked into the FDA and he found out that there's no way in one in a million you're going to be able to put in camel's milk. Okay, it's not the FDA, it's whoever it is.
The USDA closed up any farm that adulterates its milk.
Right.
Number two, every farm needs to keep daily records of every milk produced that day.
Okay, so we have quite a lot of milk mavenim here.
Why is it not restricted to America?
Rav Moshe is in America. And you can apply Rav Moshe anywhere that the reality is like America. So then you just have to do your homework. Let's go on a little bit. He has a second reason in number 17. He says, and I'll tell you a second reason. Let's read the first line. Ulachain bechalav she'asu rak bechel ba'akam. Okay, if milk is prohibited just because a non-Jew milked it, that ain Yisrael ra'ehu, and there's no Jewish supervision, yesh lahatik gamli b'Yisrael, you can allow this to a Jew because yodinan yodia brura dehave kari'ia. Because once we know something with absolutely clear knowledge, this is halachically equivalent to supervising it. And this is a principle that applies elsewhere in Shas, that if something has to be witnessed, then if I know with absolute certainty that it happened through other means, then that's as good as being witnessed. It doesn't apply in all cases. For example, sometimes witnesses are needed to create the event. At a wedding, the two Edim create the marriage. If it's done on video, we can see a video, you know, long distance CCTV of him giving the ring. It doesn't work because the Edim create the marriage. But where the Edim are only there to confirm and verify that something else happened, then if we know with an absolute certainty that it did happen even without the Edim, then you don't need the Edim. And therefore he says, I know that there's no trefa milk in there. Actually, we know. Oh, it was one in a billion. Irrelevant. That's not called we don't know. We do know. And therefore he says it's kosher for this reason too. Go to the bottom line of number 17, or the last three lines. He says in a famous caveat, Aval mikol makom lebalei nefesh. If you're a baal nefesh, you're very particular about your spiritual state, min haro'i lahachmir, then it's appropriate to be machmir, ve'ein b'zeh mishum yura, meaning I'm giving you a heter to be machmir. You're allowed to be machmir. I even recommend that you're machmir. But he's saying that not every chumrah is permitted. Some chumras are yura. Yura means arrogance, religious arrogance. You're not arrogant if you say, I insist on Chalav Yisrael. That much, he says. And I personally am careful about this. If somebody wants to be lenient, who are say kedina? He's following the halacha. And you should chas v'shalom never suspect that person of being too lax in halacha if they wish to rely on that, because according to halacha, the milk is kosher. Yes.
What's an example of a chumrah that you're not
allowed? If you're machmir on something that your own rav says is allowed. Your own rav says the Erev is allowed, but you won't carry under the Erev. That's yura. I know people who had an interesting situation that their father in London was one of the rabbonim who said the Erev was kosher, but their rav was one of the rabbonim that said the Erev was not kosher. So then they have an interesting kind of angle on that as well. But that's not for now. That's not for now.
Still kind of interesting, but going back, even when I was there in the 50s and 60s growing up, hardly any Jews were from. These people are not caring about kosher.
Right.
B'chlali.
Right.
So the fact that the whole country somehow, Siyata Deshmaya,
yes,
made it that Jews somehow, in that small percentage, would be able to have milk. That's how it
is. So you can always ask the question.
Feinstein should,
this justifying the fact that people can do that. You can always ask the question, would Rav Moshe Feinstein have said that today, 2023, 70 years later? Because now there's Chalav Yisrael wherever you go, almost wherever you go, and you can find stuff. Maybe he would never, but it's impossible to say. He wrote it in the 50s, and until he died in the 80s, he stuck by it. And the question is, would he say differently now? Okay, now it's different to the 50s. I'm not sure it's that different to the late 80s. Yes?
What's the difference between second argument and the
Well, interesting. That's a good question. Why is Rav Moshe's second argument different from the Pri Chadash? Because the Pri Chadash, I think, wasn't disagreeing. Nobody disagrees that if we have complete knowledge, then that's equivalent to witnesses. But the Pri Chadash wasn't saying that. The Pri Chadash was saying that the Gezerah itself was never made in situations where there was no treif animal there. And we're saying, yeah, no, it was. I mean, we can't say that. You don't know that for sure. He's kind of playing with the Gezerah as opposed to Rav Moshe, who was saying, I stick by the Gezerah, but they never said this on this particular. But I agree, there's like an overlap there. Mirtas is a very big difference. Correct. Correct. And Rav Moshe says very clearly that the Chasam Sofer and the Machmir opinions were only Machmir for farmers, not for governments, not for companies. Farmers are different to companies. Because farmers, people could bribe the official, people could do all sorts. Let's move on, because it's hot and it's late. Okay. Rav Soloveitchik had an additional argument, number 6. Go to number 6, page 6 rather, number 19. Page 6. Many people do not follow Rav Moshe's psak in America. There are three crowds, really. One group of people who say, we follow Rav Moshe and we eat OUD. A second group who say, we basically follow Rav Moshe, but where we can, and it's possible to get Chalav Yisrael, we like to follow Rav Moshe's recommendation to be machmir, and a lot of people do that. So they'll drink Chalav Yisrael, but when they go on vacation, they'll take away a few pints and do what they can, but then when they need to buy the local milk, they'll buy the local milk. And there are people, Chabad was mentioned, and many others, who just do not accept Rav Moshe's argument at all. And as far as they're concerned, the milk is treif, and of course it treifs up your kalim. Meaning, if you really follow the psak that the milk is treif, then it would treif up kalim as well, and Chabad paskin that way, and they will not eat of kalim that have been that have had chalav stam on it for that reason. Rav Soloveitchik had a third reason, which he said the milk is automated. The milking is automated, and therefore now you don't have a farmer milking milk. You have different levels of being removed from the process, and it's what's called koyach, koyach, koycho. It's like kocho is the farmer, koyach kocho is like the putting the milk thing on and having it go on later, and then you have another stage room because it's automated. And therefore Rav Soloveitchik said, since people are leaning even with wine production, if it's so removed and automated, then all the more so with milk production, therefore he had that argument. And Rav Soloveitchik drank, as far as I'm aware, the regular milk, and did not even recommend specifically a chumrah on that. Rav Moshe recommended a chumrah. Rav Soloveitchik says it's completely fine. That's my understanding of it. And he had this third reason as well. Let's talk in the last 5 minutes about the interaction between these different opinions. So the Ramah in number 20 basically says that somebody is strict about a kashrus issue can still eat that in the home of somebody who is lenient on a kashrus issue, because they can trust that they will not give them food that they would not eat. And of course the host has to be careful to tell them that, you know, this is whatever it is, heta mechira, are you okay with that? I'm fine, I'm not fine, I just wanted to tell you, etc. However, the Ramah also says, and this may change our perspective on the kelim, go to the top of page 7. The Ramah here says, we're dealing with a certain kind of chelev, not chalav, this is chelev, fat. Now suet, fat, is a kares prohibition. You're dealing with a level of prohibition which is many times higher than chalav akum. He says, chelev hadovok lekeres shetachas haprisa. This I'm not getting into bovine anatomy, but there's a certain chelev which is under the stomach. He says, osa. You can't eat that. That's called chelev, chayv kares. Says the Ramah, v'chein haminag b'chol makom. And that's what all Jews do. They are machmir. Milvad b'nei Rhinus, apart from the Jews in the Rhine Valley, shenogim b'miksaso heta, that some of the Jews in the Rhine Valley say that it's mutter. Very small minority. V'ein moichim b'yadam, and you can't criticize them, shikfar hoyer lehem zakin, because they have a tradition, an ancient tradition that they eat this fat. And therefore he says, since there is an opinion that legitimately says that it's kosher, therefore, ein oisrin kalim shel b'nei Rhinus, you who don't eat that fat, can still eat off the pots and pans of the Jews from the Rhine Valley, hoil v'noigim bo heta, because they hold that it's kosher, and it's a legit opinion, even though you don't hold that, and it's a small minority. But if there is a legitimate halachic opinion that says that this is kosher, even if you don't rely on it, you can still eat off the pots and pans. Interestingly, according to this, then everybody could eat off the pots and pans, because they'll say, look, Rav Moshe's opinion is a legit opinion, unless they're going to delegitimize Rav Moshe's psak, and then you're getting into a whole new level of problems. But assuming they wouldn't say that, then they will be able to eat off the kalim. Okay, fine. Number 22, can people switch to the lenient view? So Rav Moshe says, if you always knew that the milk was basically okay, chalav stam, but you were machmir on yourself, because you want it to be machmir, then if you want to change back to be lenient, you need to do hataras nadarim. Because you always knew it was okay, but you chose not to drink it. But if they told you that chalav stam is all treif, and you thought nobody says it's allowed, apart from some sketchy opinion, this is how kids are educated. They're told it's all treif, and there aren't any serious rabbis that say it's out. If that's what they taught you, then when you find out the truth, you don't need to do hataras nadarim. Because you were lied to. And the reason you didn't eat it is because you thought it was treif. And you were wrong. So that's not a real neder. So you could just now eat it if you want to. And I find this all the time. Certainly when it comes to Shemitah. People then say, well, there's this level. And they say, it's treif. That's treif. And people then are asking me, what's, you know, the two issues which I have a lot of anxiety from. Three issues students about. One of them is Chalav Yisrael, where they feel this religious pressure to take on not to eat chalav stam, and they agonize about it because they feel that they're not really frum unless they eat chalav Yisrael. Okay, another one is Shemitah, where people are very nervous about it, but that's usually to kind of just block it out, like, don't talk to me, I don't want to know about it. And the other one is listening to music on Yom HaAtzmaut. I have students who agonize, should I listen to music, should I not listen to music? Because once you listen to music on Yom HaAtzmaut, you become a Zionist. Once you become a Zionist, whoa, that has a lot of implications to your religious status in the eyes of other people. People agonize, and of course, on a level of 1 to 10, in terms of how serious is the potential halakhic problem of listening to the music. During Sfirian, there's not really even an issue to listen to music. Okay, but that's an issue that people are concerned about. Three last points. Butter. The Rambam brings down is that there are different opinions on butter. Because basically, non-kosher milk won't turn into butter, won't curdle. So one opinion said, therefore, it's fine, even though it comes from milk from non-Jews. And one opinion is, it's not fine because it might have like milk residue left in the butter. Now, today, there is no milk residue left in the butter. Butter's real butter. The problem is today, you can make butter from anything. You can make anything from anything, honestly, today. But still, ad hayom hazeh, there are many poskim who say that even if you're makpid on chalav Yisrael, if there's butter made from chalav stam, then there's less of a reason to be machmir, and therefore that is a psek which is very much out there. Powdered milk is something we just need to mention briefly. I'm sorry, I just have a minute. In Eretz Yisrael, there is a very established psek of Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank that said that we are machmir like the Chasam Sofer. We do not rely on the Pri Chadosh. We do not allow Chalav Stam. However, the Gezeru was never made on powdered milk. They didn't have powdered milk at the time of Chazal. And it's very difficult to powder non-kosher milk. And it's very expensive to powder non-kosher milk. And therefore, we're not worried for all those reasons. And therefore, they said the Rabbanut made a psak, and they still stick to this psak, even though there's pressure on the Rabbanut to reverse it, that they will give a Rabbanut Hechsher to milk stam chalav products that come from Chutz La'aretz, usually, almost always, but they're powdered milk, which is almost everything. Almost every OUD product is made with powdered milk. And therefore the Rabbanut, right on the product, with a Hechsher of the Rabbanut HaRashid, La'ochlei avkat chalav nachri. Or Chalav Stam, I can't remember what they put. I think Chalav Nachri, they put Lavkat Chalav Nachri. And they stick by that psak to this day. The problem, like I said before, is now you can powder anything from anything. I looked online. Within two clicks, I could buy powdered horse milk and powdered camel milk. Straight there. Okay, and people really pushing it. So is this still relevant? Yeah, it's still relevant, but it's a psak, particularly in Israel. Cheese, I'm not going to talk about today. We'll go on to cheese next time, although I brought you a teaser. A cheese teaser on page 8, you can look in advance. I'll just make one statement on Israel. In Israel, Chalav Yisrael is much less of an issue because all milk is Chalav Yisrael. You have to go a long way to find milk from non-Jewish dairies. Almost all the dairies in this country are Jewish-owned and there are Jews milking the milk. But there's another different problem in this country, which is milk on Shabbos. Because in America, if the non-Jews milk on Shabbos, asma, they don't keep Shabbos. But in this country, if you milk on Shabbos, milk produced on Shabbos is prohibited. Okay? It's a doraisa to milk account Shabbos. Therefore, what is the status of the milk? So I spoke to Rav Weitman about this. He's the Rosh, he's the Rav Amachshir of Tnuva. And he said to me, this is the difference between the Mahadrin and non-Mahadrin milk. Really, the amount of milk that gets into the system, which is milked on Shabbos, is minuscule, and almost all of that is milked by machines on Shabbos. It's not even milked by Jews going like this on Shabbos, okay? Therefore, the amount is minuscule, therefore it's bottle in hundreds, and even if you want to be machmir, the milk is fine. If you want to buy Mahadrin, Mahadrin guarantees no Shabbos milk got into that batch of milk. Okay, that's a good thing to do, but really, la halacha, the milk is kosher, even if it's got a tiny little bit of Shabbos milk in it. Yes?
But it's not an issue to milk the cow.
Okay, it is correct. We're not a Hilchah Shabbos. It is prohibited to milk the cow and keep the milk. It is you're obligated to milk the cow, correct? Because it's Sarbal Echaim, 100%, but you have to dispose of the milk in some way. Or use an automatic milking machine, and there are different ways of doing that, but that's not for now. Now that the Israelis invented a machine which has a 3D imaging of the exact cow's udders, and the cow has a chip. So when the cow approaches the milking machine, the contours of the milk machine change to fit this cow's exact udders, and the cow yields so much more milk, because instead of somebody basically going like this at the cow, or a machine doing that, I assume hands are a bit more gentle than a machine, but this cow is like, oh, benachat, it's got a beautiful contour-assisted machine, and that's one of the reasons why this land flows with milk and honey, because Baruch Hashem, the Israelis have got the know-how to make the cows happy. Okay, we'll leave it there for now. Next week we're doing cheese.